the simple way to describe this, it's a new paradigm in how we deal with processing of information. It's using a completely different model. We're using quantum physics. We're using physics as the underlying mechanics to make it all work. And as such, it means that we're having to approach it differently because things are done in a different way. The way that quantum enables us to work, specifically in the computing sense, it takes away, let's call them sort of limitations, which are imposed based on the amount of semiconductors we can build onto a circuit, and opens up the opportunity to be able to have more power, more processing capability, with little to no more energy usage.
You are listening to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards.
Hello, this is Matthew Childs, and welcome to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards. Now, the voice you heard at the top of the episode was that of IBM Technical Relations Manager and standards maker Tony Holland, and he was talking about quantum technology, the subject of this episode. Quantum technology takes ideas from quantum physics to do things today's tech can't, like computers that solve problems no supercomputer can, and communications that can't be hacked. And it matters because it could change everyday life in ways we'd all notice. Safer banking, better medicine, smarter climate action tracking, quicker supply chains. And the truth is, some of this is already happening. That's why the UN has declared 2025 the International Year of Quantum Science and Technology, a signal that we're moving from lab experiments into real-world impact. And to make it all work globally, standards bodies like BSI, IEC and ISO are working with stakeholders to make sure these systems are secure, trusted and can work together. We wanted to explore the issue of quantum now because standards in this area are still in their relative infancy, both in terms of the standards themselves and the structures being built to develop them. Now, this isn't a deep dive episode, it's more about dipping our toes in the water. And we're doing that through the insights and experiences of two people right at the sharp end, the aforementioned Tony Holland and my colleague Gavin Jones, who is leading quantum standards development at BSI. So this episode is in three parts. We start with the big picture, what quantum is and why global standards matter. Then bring it closer to home with the UK's role, lifting the lid a little on the role of UK standards committees and how the whole process works, before moving on to look at the quantum standards development progress so far, and what's next. Now, before we get down to it, here's Cindy Parakill with a quick reminder.
Hey, just a quick reminder to follow, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen. Want to get in touch or find us on socials? All the links you need are in the show notes.
Tony Holland is a seasoned IT professional with over 25 years experience, including more than 20 years as a consultant at IBM, where he currently serves as Technical Relations Manager for the UK and Northern Europe. And he is deeply involved in standards development at national, European and international levels, contributing his expertise for standards in areas such as AI, cloud, cybersecurity and autonomous transport. He is a member or chair of multiple standards committees, including chairing BSI committee ICT4 for quantum technologies. Gavin Jones is leading the development of AI and quantum standards at BSI, and he is responsible for ICT4, working with and alongside Tony Holland. Now, as I said, this is an episode in three parts. In this first part, the focus is on the big picture, what quantum technology is, why it matters, and the role of international standards to shape this fast-moving field. So I started by asking Tony, what is quantum technology?
The simple way to describe this, it's a new paradigm in how we deal with processing of information. It's using a completely different model. We're using quantum physics. We're using physics as the underlying mechanics to make it all work. And as such, it means that we're having to approach it differently because things are done in a different way. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, the way that quantum enables us to work, specifically in the computing sense, it takes away let's call them sort of limitations, which are imposed based on the amount of semiconductors we can build onto a circuit, and opens up the opportunity to be able to have more power, more processing capability, with effectively with little to no more energy usage. So as an example, very basic, so I won't get into the nitty-gritty of it, but in traditional sense, we have zeros and ones in classical computers. The ones, you know, what we're talking about now is all going over the airwaves of zeros and ones. When you come to the quantum world in computing sense, you still have zeros and ones potentially, but you have a position where something called a superposition, where a particular thing can be a zero and a one. And when you can connect two of those together in an entanglement sense, you have potentially a zero and a one and another zero and another one. So it goes from having simple, effectively on or off switches to having a very much more scalable set of opportunities, really. And the power of the machine grows exponentially the more you add on to it. Whereas if you wanted to double the power of a current machine, you'd have to literally get the same thing and build it on the back end. So essentially, this is all about taking a different view of the world, using physics at its lowest level, and using that as the source of enablement for computing going forward. The problems with that are that the technology required to actually see whether you've got a zero or a one and be able to do something with it, or a zero and a one and do something with it, require a lot more processing power, in as much as you can't just monitor it. You can't just see it, put it through a gate, and away you go. You have to measure it in a slightly different way, slightly being a slightly simplistic term there. And it means that it's still evolving. We haven't yet got to a point where, I mean, we know how things work, but as to a process of connecting everything together to make it a solution, let's call it, is very much a case of we have different parts and we're plugging them together in different ways. Different people are doing different things to try and make something at the end which does a job. And depending on what you've got and how you use it and how you plug it together, the job which you're trying to achieve may be different. We're still at very early days of this, but ultimately we're talking about a new way of looking at data, a new way of measuring data, a new way of processing data, and ultimately a new capability and power of processing data, which is far more scalable than was in the classical computing days.
Now, Gavin, JTC3, Joint Technical Committee 3, why did ISO and IC, you know, why have they decided to create a new Joint Technical Committee for quantum technologies?
The ecosystem of quantum technologies, firstly, is one that's growing rapidly, not just in the UK, but regionally in Europe and also internationally, with a lot of different players interested in building their, you know, their country industry and societal good. And what will be apparent to listeners is that quantum technologies of themselves are very complex. And what we had in terms of standardization, so the structure of the committees that we had prior to quantum technologies coming to the fore internationally, were not committees that were specifically focused on technology. So mutually recognized multi-stakeholder approach is something that was really needed for quantum technologies and not just quantum computing. So we had the, and still do have, the very important Joint Technical Committee 1. And it was seen that in order to accommodate the technical depth of quantum technologies, you also needed to enable, and I quote, collaboration and surveillance across the horizontal breadth of the different quantum domains and technologies. So what was in the existing formal standardization ecosystem needed to be developed and enhanced, and an approach needed that would separate from that, not entirely, of course, because you'll always need the computing expertise, but more so to focus on the collaboration and surveillance aspects of how quantum, you know, where quantum technologies affect different stakeholder groups and multi-stakeholder groups, and therefore need a multi-stakeholder approach to when it comes to writing standards. You know, it's a very complex space, and I think that the thing I really wanted to drill into is the fact that the The national standards bodies, so BS, the British Standards Institution, who I work for, is one of those for the UK. So not one of those, it's the only national standards body for the UK, but it's one of the NSBs that is represented in the Joint Technical Committee across the world. And our job is essentially to ensure that all voices are heard when it comes to standards development. And the standards of themselves will be highly technical. And at the moment, the standards that are going through the system are very, very technical. There are a lot of terminology standards, but there are also standards being developed in specific areas such as enabling technologies and hybridization between the incoming sort of quantum computing technologies aligned with existing classical computing or high-performance HPC computing that already exists. So the best way to do that in terms of standards is to have this multi-stakeholder approach, and that's what the NSBs tend to facilitate. And by having that Joint Technical Committee 3, the new JTC3, it's able to both accommodate that technical depth of quantum technologies and also enable the collaboration across as many multi-stakeholder groups as possible.
Tony, you mentioned that this is a sort of fast-moving and complex area of technology, and Gavin's talked there about we have JTC3 now. Just wonder if, you know, broadly and generally, what role do standards or will standards play in shaping this new field?
I'll start by saying we are still very early in the evolution of standards for quantum-related technologies. Communications has been slightly in advance of things like computing and sensing and imaging and the enabling technologies as well. But it's still relatively early. If you look at standards and what they're there for, they're there really to set a playing field, a level ground so that everybody can work from, knowing that certain things are in place. So if let's just talk about terminology for a moment. If you define a term and somebody, you know, if it's documented, then everybody can see that, understand what it means, and then hopefully everybody can be talking the same language. Without that as a starting point, people are going to be potentially talking about the same things, but using completely different terminology, and conversations are very complicated. So with simple things like the terminology, definitions, some of the foundational elements to just building blocks so that we know where we're starting from and we can grow from there, then at least we have a common ground where everybody can start to move from. We are still in a research and development phase. If you actually go to your local hardware store, your local computer shop and say, can I have a quantum computer, please? They would look at you blankly and go, well, no, they're not consumer products. That's the difficulty, I would say, that we're in at the moment. Lots of people are trying to standardize quantum technologies, but there are very few, if not no, accessible commercial quantum technologies that people can use. So we have to balance that very carefully. So if you push too far ahead too quickly, we're going to be wasting our time. But there is a point where, and ultimately, I know Gavin could easily probably fill in some of these extra bits as well. There's a need out there. At a certain point in time, there will be a need for a standard to be created. Is there an industry need? Is there a particular job that needs to be addressed? Are lots of people jumping up and down saying, we need this, we need this? And at that point, you can clearly see that there's a desire and a need to actually start to look at areas and start to develop standards in a specific case. So, as I said, this is a balancing act right now. Lots of technology, very quickly moving, very quickly changing, yet we still have this need to potentially create standards so that, as I said, we've got this level playing field. I could talk about things like USB-C as an example. We all know what that is. The fact that we know that what a USB-C connector is, we know where we can plug it, where it will fit, where it won't, because it's standard. Actually, what goes over the wire itself is completely different, and there are different variations, USB 3.2 and 3.0 and Apple's Thunderbolt. They're different technologies and protocols which operate across it. But at least you know a USB-C connector is a USB-C connector. And if you go back only a few years, you had A and mini USB and B and so on and so on. But these are all documented so that people know how to plug something into something and what it's going to do once you plug it in. But ultimately, other organizations can think, well, I want to plug into the latest Samsung phone. I need a USB-C connector, but I want to do specific data. So at least they can look at a standard and say, I know where to send the data across specific wires so that it gets to the right place and doesn't blow your phone up. That's really, really it. Setting the scene, setting the framework and the baseline for the understanding of what something does so that other operators can start to use the technology, knowing that it's going to work and they can connect to it or utilize it in some particular way. But try not to forge ahead too quickly, because we might just be wasting our time if we go too far ahead too fast.
So Tony's talking there, Gavin, about the sort of, you know, we're at the start really of this global standards journey for quantum. I just wonder where sort of the policy and regulatory frameworks, you know, where are we with that, particularly in Europe maybe, for this new technology?
As you can imagine, you know, from what Tony's been saying, the technologies themselves, the quantum technologies, are still very, very nascent. So that means that's an industry that's in development. And what tends to happen with industries in development is that regulations tend to follow. Now, at the moment, regulation in Europe, there is none related directly to quantum standards. There are trade regulations, and some countries, including China, have their own country-specific regulations. But when it comes to Europe specifically, the standards eventually, when there are regulations published is the wrong word, when regulations come into force and are developed, there will be standards that need to align with those and to be harmonized with those. And that's where the national standards body come in directly. But at the moment, it's a very much a new space. The European Union, for example, when it comes to standardization, published a recent report, and they will be publishing a European quantum standards roadmap, which is basically to demonstrate that they will be supporting technical standardization, and that will be coming in 2026.
And what direction is that? Will that be taking us, Gavin?
So yeah, the direction that will be taking us is that the standardization programs will be supported by regulation and by the European Commission, and potentially in the UK as well. So, you know, quantum technology, yes, it's a new technology, set of technologies. Yes, they're difficult to explain. They are still being very much researched. But the point is that there is also a huge amount of investment coming from governments across the world in these technologies. So in the UK, we have the quantum strategy from the Department of Science, Innovation and Technology, and lots of different programs in support of that. For example, the Quantum Standards Network being developed across 5 different partnerships, including BSI. The standards that are going to be developed will be supporting those regulations, and they tend to work hand in hand as well. So the sort of structure for that multi-stakeholder approach is the actual committees, where you have groups of experts that sit on the committees and they provide the content from the UK perspective and from the other NSB perspectives into the standards that have been developed in Europe that will then support regulations when those regulations come about.
Standards affect all of us, every day, everywhere. By defining good practice, they help people and organizations do things better. Each year, standards bodies publish thousands of standards, and we're always looking for more people like you to join our growing community of standards makers. We welcome applicants from all backgrounds, areas of expertise, and career stages. Our goal is simple: to bring a balance of perspectives to the table. As a standards maker, you can help improve how things are made and done, whether it's building more inclusive workplaces, improving healthcare, advancing AI governance, accelerating climate action, and much more. If you want to make a difference and help shape the world through standards, start your standards making journey today. Details on how to get involved are in the show notes.
So in part one, we zoomed right out to the big picture: what quantum is, why ISO and IC set up a joint technical committee, and how the global standards journey is beginning to take shape. In part two, we dig into the UK perspective right now, how mirror committees work, who gets a seat at the table, and the role BSI is playing in bringing the right people together. So I want to move us on now to talk about some of the UK perspective here, and particularly around the committees themselves. So we have JTC3, the Joint Technical Committee, ISO and IC, looking at quantum, and that's mirrored by ICT4, the BSI committee, which you chair, Tony. But Generally, Gavin, come to you first. You know, what exactly is a mirror committee and why do they matter?
A mirror committee is a group of experts who basically provide UK-specific expertise and content into the international standardization ecosystem. So when you have an international standards committee such as JTC3, you need to have the national standards bodies as members on those committees. And the national standards body, as a result, develops and creates a committee that can provide the voice into that international committee and the regional ones as well for Europe. Why do they matter? Because the content or the needs of the United Kingdom across defence sectors, across the security sectors, across societal, and very importantly, across industry, have their own needs. And those needs and wants need to be reflected in the international standards. It's as simple as that, really. And when those needs are reflected in the international standards, in the meetings that we have to facilitate the content, to develop the content for those standards, that of itself is a collaboration effort across internationally. So the UK has specific needs when it comes to defence and security, as does every country in the world, but they need to be met and collaborated across the international committee. But it's those views that need to be, the UK views, if you like, the content needs to be reflected in the international content.
So, Gavin, you mentioned there about the UK perspective. I'm interested to know, you know, who gets a seat at the table? What sort of stakeholders are we talking about here? And how does BSI go about making that happen?
The stakeholders we have organisations represented across industry. So that is actual businesses are represented on the committee. They can be startups, SMEs, and much larger businesses as well, and global businesses. We have government, UK government represented on the committee directly. So they have expert policymakers on the ICT4 committee from the Department of Science, Innovation and Technology. We have the Department of Transport, and eventually we also have the regulators when that becomes a need across quantum technologies. We also have very much so the National Metrology Institute. They have a lot of expertise represented on the committee. We will also shortly have the National Quantum Computing Centre, for example, and in very importantly, academia as well. So we have a lot of universities directly represented.
So Tony, are we still looking for people to join the committee?
Yes.
I just wonder if any particular perspectives that you feel are, you know, are required at the moment that aren't represented at, so far.
The area that we are probably missing at the moment is the industry view. There are tech companies who are making a contribution to standards development, but if you put it on a scale, it's very much lightweight. And it's heavily skewed towards the research and academia to who are providing the resources, the real experts in certain areas. So, as I said, we need to shift to industry. So we need to get those industry players involved, tech companies, startups, small SMEs. It doesn't really matter who it is, as long as they are focusing on the quantum world of quantum technologies, and they are able to contribute to some of the discussions and provide resources to help develop or help us to develop standards going forward.
It's interesting because a lot of the conversations Tony and I have in the committee can center around that sort of business development aspect, and we do have experts on the committee who are about, you know, how an enabling technology can be sort of installed in an industry and how those technologies build those industries. We have conversations around things such as model cards, so where you have an analysis of your technology makeup within a business or organization, and how a new technology such as the quantum technologies that have been developed can help enable and develop that technology, and can, you know, essentially build on the output of that business. And the standards essentially are there to help enable that. And that's where those experts come in. That's where those industry experts are needed. And it's an ongoing body of work, but I completely agree. It's the industry that we really need, and where you're marrying those astonishing ideas in quantum technologies, those academic papers and the research, with what needs to be done in industry to operationalize those.
So obviously, Tony, you are chair of ICT4, and Gavin, you are the committee manager here. I'm interested to know about the relationship between you both and what it looks like in practice. You know, how does it work and how important is it? Gavin, I'll come to you first. How important is the relationship between the committee chair and the committee manager?
It's absolutely vital. It's an ongoing and it's a dynamic relationship as well. Tony and I work very, very, very closely. We meet a lot. We talk about, we have to be very open with each other. There's a lot of trust that we have and that, you know, that we maintain. And that is across, I would say, across all the committees. This is, you know, quantum technologies is an incredible opportunity for the UK and one that's already, you know, starting to bear fruit. In short, it's a very, very important relationship, very, very important. And I didn't mention that it's one that I actually enjoy as well. As I said, there's a lot of learning from that relationship, personal learning, professional learning, and I'm looking forward to continuing that as well.
Tony, you mentioned that you've been a standards maker and committee member and chair for more than a decade now. Just wonder, you know, what from your perspective, what does a relationship between the chair and the committee manager, you know, how important is that generally? But also, as Gavin's been talking there, particularly around ICT4 and the fact that, you know, we're on this early stages of the journey with quantum technology.
So in general, the importance between the chair and the committee manager, it's massively important. There is an absolute requirement for openness, transparency, and as Gavin's already said, this word trust. If I can't trust the committee manager and the committee manager can't trust the chair, it's not going to work very well. It has to be open and transparent. We are effectively a team together, working for a bigger team or working with a bigger team. We have to share everything that needs to be shared, such that nobody is caught out, nobody's surprised. Nobody walks into a meeting and goes, okay, well, I'm a bit out of my comfort zone here because I didn't know about this. Everybody, Gavin and myself, we need to know what's going on wherever the information is coming from. Everything's moving very fast. There are lots of discussions going on outside the UK and in the UK as well. But for us to make sure that we are up to speed, we're not falling behind, we're aware of everything, and we as a nation can react to it, then we have to talk an awful lot more than maybe some other committees that are, let's call them historical, they've been around for 10, 20, 30 years. They've perhaps hit the plateau or a plateau, and they're just kind of ticking over, just making sure that nothing is being missed. We've got the job of seeing, you know, cutting edge, bleeding edge technology coming in, which has to be considered in some respects. And if we don't do it, somebody else will be looking at it anyway. So we have to be aware of it. We have to be able to address those things that are going on. So yeah, it's very much a close relationship. With respect to the quantum world, I foresee that our, Gavin and my relationship as committee manager and chair is very much something which is going to continue for a number of years going forward yet, as long as one of us, you know, as long as both of us stay with the same positions, then I think that will continue and that will work. But if one of us has to be changed, then, which could happen at some point, then hopefully whomever can also find that bond and be able to work harmoniously together as well.
So in part two there, we dug a little into the UK perspective, how mirror committees work, who gets a seat at the table, and the role BSI is playing in bringing the right people together. And of course, that key relationship between committee chair and manager in the whole process. In part three, I speak to Tony and Gavin about where the UK is heading with quantum standards, the progress made so far, and what's next. So I want to move us on then to look at sort of the work ahead, really, in terms of standards development. Gavin, coming to you first, you know, what's the UK strategy here for quantum technology standards, and what are we trying to achieve?
The last sort of 2 or 3 months, myself and Tony and colleagues at BSI as well have been building research intelligence on what the UK needs are when it comes to quantum technologies. We've had lots of conversations, interviews with about 11 or 12 stakeholders at the moment, experts across the UK, who have essentially told us what their stakeholder groups need, you know, what they need. So there's kind of a statement I just want to make regarding that strategy. It's one that will, you know, the need for that strategy is to develop a truly multi-stakeholder ecosystem that enables industry to meet the needs of society and the UK economy as a whole for a safe and prosperous future. And, you know, the way of developing that is that BSI, yes, we do have expertise in quantum technology of itself and developing that within our business, but we also have to be a listening partner to understand what those UK needs are. We can't tell industry in the UK what needs to be in those standards. We need to understand what is needed from those absolutely key stakeholders. That stakeholders across security, across academia, across computing, the developing computer industry, supply chain, business focus, all that kind of thing. And all of that needs to be developed into the mix so that we know essentially where we're going and we know how to manage those sort of exogenous shocks in industry where we don't know where the technology is going to take us. So the strategy of itself needs to build in that flexibility. So where we are with ICT4 at the moment, the UK Mirror Committee that I manage directly, the strategy that we're developing will essentially be voiced via the Quantum Standards Network, which is in development still. I can talk about sort of enabling standards, model card standardization, hybridization of quantum technology computing with high performance computing or HPCs. We can talk about traveling wave parametric amplifiers, for example, which is a very deep sort of technical standard being developed in Europe. And then most importantly, top of the tree, we have the IEC standards that are being developed. So they have their ad hoc groups, where they've essentially distilled the ideas from industry, from academia, from those national standards bodies across the world into and now developing set of standardization work items. Everything is in development, and it's really the absolute, from my perspective, the absolute key, the most important thing is that concept of collaboration, and that goes through the entire standards ecosystem value chain. The whole process needs to be on a collaborative basis, especially at IEC. So yes, the UK has specific needs in defence and security. So looking at algorithms, for example, you know, post-quantum cryptography, quantum key distribution, you know, there are various very, very important different approaches from that from various different groups in the UK. But those need to be, as I use this word again, married with that and a collaborative approach at IEC when it comes to the development of those standards in those particular areas, for example, algorithms, quantum key distribution, whatever it might be. So it's really that collaboration. And I touched on this earlier about tension management, but that is absolutely vital. If we're not, and when I say we, I mean the British Standards Institution, I mean it, you know, everyone who is on that committee, everyone who's involved internally at BSI and internationally, all the other national standards bodies, you know, the National Metrology Institute, all those really, really important organisations need to collaborate. And I feel that that is understood. It's a thing that is understood, and it's, you know, in some quarters, it's beginning to be understood as well. The way you collaborate, that is where you'll get that safe, prosperous future.
Tony, Gavin has mentioned there about the UK strategy, there's sort of broad issues around quantum technology standards. You know, what progress have we made so far? You know, what standards have been developed and what's coming next?
The only one real, any real standard that's been published is commonly known as 4879. This was developed, it was actually published last year. This is on vocabulary. This came from JTC1's Working Group 14, which then subsequently got moved across to JTC3. So that's the only real standard that is actually published. These are the building blocks to enable more detailed standards to be created. If you start down in the weeds looking at a specific technology area without having the framework to support it, it's going to be pointless and meaningless. So you have to start with things which are high level, very much cross-cutting, and they apply to many, if not everybody. So we're now moving to a state where we're still looking to make sure that we've got the foundational elements, the building blocks to enable us to step forward over the course of the next 10, 15, 20 years. And then on the back of that, we'll be getting more into the details of how specific technology works, perhaps when they've established themselves a little bit better.
Tony, you said at the very beginning, we started this conversation, that you've been in computing for a long time, sort of 20 years or so.
Forever,
yes. And you obviously you are working in standards in a very exciting area of technology. Just wonder, you know, how exciting is that? You know, what, you know, you're doing something that's groundbreaking here. How exciting is it to be a standards maker in quantum technology?
It's hard to put into words, actually.
Well, given this is a podcast, I won't get you to mime it. You will need to find some words.
Sure, thank you. I will use an analogy which that relates to a conversation I had with another committee manager a year or so ago. What we do, we tend to be fairly blinkered in what we do. We've focused on the job at hand, and you don't realise what it is you're doing. But if you stop and you step back and you look at what you're doing, what the standard is, the what sort of impact it's going to have, where things are going, the fact that the technology is literally bleeding edge, and you actually stop and think about it, you're thinking, this is actually quite exciting, but we're so close to it we don't realise. And this is something that somebody said to me about another area I was working in. I didn't realise just to the extent of what we were doing. And they said, well, think about it. And it turned out that it was actually quite important, quite impactful as well. So yes, thinking about it now, quantum is very early. We've got a long way to go. You know, IT standards have been being developed for many, many, many decades, and we're still developing them, and things keep changing. We're only at the very first step of a long journey. This is also very exciting at the moment because we're not just creating standards, but we're actually starting to build the future for standards, and specifically in the quantum space, quantum technology space. We're laying the foundations for what's going to come in 10, 20, 30 years' time, and for whoever is going to be developing and delivering standards in 20, 30 years' time. So we're effectively laying the foundations for what's going to be coming down the line. That is actually quite an exciting thing to say. You know, think about it, you realise how important this is. It's a big deal.
Now, of course, I couldn't let Tony and Gavin go without asking them about their standards journeys, something regular listeners know we love to explore. So ask Tony and Gavin just that. How and when did their standards journey start? And where are they now? First up, Tony.
I will start by saying, probably like the majority of people who work in standards, I fell into it. I've only ever met one person who actively said prior to starting standards, I want to work in standards, and did their best to head down that route. I met one person once that said that, and I can't remember who it was. But for me, I've been in technology for forever. Through those engagements which I had, I was very much somebody who had to communicate, had to share, had to advise, had to guide. And so I very quickly understood and got to grips with things like strategy and direction and so on. And what happened was I was looking to step away from technology a little, just because hands-on technical changes so rapidly that often you're playing catch up. So I took a step back. I found an opportunity to work with in more of a strategic and political environment. So yes, a dozen years ago I started, and frankly, it's been a roller coaster ride, a very steep learning curve to understand the processes involved. But subsequently, right now, the activity that I'm working on and the groups I'm working with are really engaging. It's really interesting. It's ever changing. And if you like a fast paced, fast moving environment, but ultimately if you find your niche area there, the thing that kind of makes you wake up in the morning and gives you a positive buzz, which I think I'm in at the moment, then that's really helpful as well. So, you know, get up in the morning and you're thinking, what have I got to do today? A few problems, lots of meetings, lots of discussions, lots of trying to work out what this means long-term and strategy, and how does that fit into the global picture? And if it doesn't, then we need to find solutions to it, albeit that hopefully it fits in both with the nation's requirements and BSI's strategy and everybody else's strategy as well. And it all comes together in this big picture of a standard at the end.
And Tony, tell me about the sort of the committees that you sit on and that you chair. Give us some numbers here. We love our numbers.
We do. Oh, I can give you acronyms as well. Specifically, I'm a member, an active member of BSI committees for accessibility, for cloud computing, for artificial intelligence. I am the chair of the UK Mirror Committee for quantum computing, and I'm also the chair for the IT, what they call ICT1, which is the coordination strategy for IT-related standards, which aligns with ISO and IEC's JTC1, Joint Technical Committee 1, which is information technology. So I'm the chair of those two. And then I work at the European level in committees on artificial intelligence, quantum, and the new one in relation to the EU's Data Act, which came about this end of last year, beginning of this year. And then at the international level, at the JTC1, JTC3, and subcommittees of JTC1 as well, like as I said, about cloud computing, the SC38 on cloud computing and distributed platforms. So a whole variety, and that keeps me pretty much busy all hours of the day.
Well, you told us you'd stumbled into standards, and you've clearly been seduced, because that is a pretty big list there, Tony. How about you, Gavin? From your perspective, did you stumble into standards too? What's been your standards journey? When did it start for you, and where are you now?
I love this question, Matthew. I sort of stumbled into standards professionally, in the sense that I joined BSI as an editor quite a long time ago now, 10, 11 years ago, and fell into the standards development role. So what that means is that the role itself is essentially managing committees of experts and quote-unquote hiring experts into committees and ensuring that, you know, all voices are heard and the right standards get published, and that, you know, people know and understand the standards process, and that, you know, we understand how industries develop and even societies. I enjoy the standards work because I work with experts such as Tony, who are very passionate about their area of expertise. They have deep domain knowledge, but it's also their attitude to the work and to the standardization system itself and what it's for, and how they're developed on the basis of purpose. And I think the things that I get biggest kick out of in this role, the current role especially, is the intellectual aspect and also the tension management aspect. So what I mean by that is that all of the standards work, the content of those standards is built around the principle of what we call consensus. So it's not just one body that says, you know, this is what the content needs to be. It's where you listen to all those differing voices, you manage that tension so that you get something new out of it in the form of content and the standard. And in what the intention then is that standard, the content of that standard, builds an industry. It can build certification around the standard. You can operationalize laws and regulations across Europe internationally. So, you know, we do have the international first approach to standards, but it also works regionally and also nationally. But it's that tension management that I absolutely love, even though it's very difficult. But it's when you can get opposing voices coming together to agree, even to agree to disagree in some instances, on what that content needs to be. You know, BSI... as a company, cannot publish standards just for one stakeholder group, and we don't do that either. We have to listen to all those differing voices. So there can be sort of philosophies around a particular technology. There are also, of course, the mainstay in terms of the actual technological content itself. So, you know, how those widgets fit together. You know, in quantum technologies, for example, we have components and supply chain, which is one of the more profitable aspects of that industry in the UK. So how can we help that industry? Well, we get them in the room, we get them to talk about those widgets and, you know, how they can standardize on those so that others can then use those standards, incorporate them into their business systems, whatever it might be, and then develop their own products that are safe and reliable for the UK to build UK industry, and also to build it in terms of a mutually recognizable system across countries as well. But it's really that tension management that I absolutely love. And I just love it. Being an observer across that multi-stakeholder ecosystem, it is an incredible privilege as well. I mean, I am so privileged to be in this role. And I think all of the people that I work with across the business that I'm in will feel the same, that it's that just an incredible privilege to work with all of these experts that we work with directly on a daily basis. It's challenging. It's a very challenging role. But I, you know, Tony was talking about getting up in the morning. Well, the reason I get up in the morning is I like talking to Tony. I like talking to all the various other experts that we have across the committees, even when there are challenges.
Oh, it's disappointing, Gavin. I thought you were going to say only get out of bed in the morning for Quantum. Anyway, we'll work with
that. That's probably going to be the case in the future, yes.
My thanks to Tony Holland and Gavin Jones for talking to me about quantum technology and standards, and also for sharing their standards journeys. Now, to find out more about the themes raised in this episode and about how to get involved in standards, then follow the links in the show notes. And the show notes are also where you can find details of our socials and all the other ways to get in touch with us here on The Standard Show.
You have been listening to an episode of The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.